Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico, and of course, you're listening to another Thursday evening of Golf Talk Live, and I want to thank you guys for joining me and tuning into the program. Got another great Coach's Corner coming up here in just a moment, but before we do, let me just remind everybody, of course, we are live every Thursday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. Central Time. That's 7 to 9 for those of you on the East Coast, and just wanted to remind everybody that go to blogtalkradio.com. Up in the search key, you can type Golf Talk Live, and you can tune into the program live from there. If you happen to miss tonight's live broadcast, you can go to that same link, blogtalkradio.com/Golf Talk Live. And what you can do is you can scroll down through the on-demand section and visit any of the shows that you might be able to previously have missed. Excuse me. Later in the show, I've got a great guest, Brian Dixon from Wyndham Vacation Opportunities. He's going to be joining me here. He's going to be talking about the Mike Campbell. It's the fifth annual Mike Campbell Golf Tournament, which is benefiting the Ann Stork Center. And I'll tell you a little bit about the Ann Stork Center a little bit later on. But tonight, as I said, we've got a great show. Got a Coach's Corner panel here. And let me just bring the guys on here, and we'll get started. First up, of course, is Scott Seiferlein. He's been on the show a number of times, both as a guest and also on the panel several times as well. He's a PGA golf guru at Grand Rapids Golf Lesson.com, and he's also the author of several books. He's from the Grand Rapids, Michigan area, and we're going to bring him on here in just a second. Also is Scott Millman. He's a master teacher professional and the owner and president of the Simple World of Golf, as well as the co-owner founder at the Millman NRG Foundation, which helps many of the wounded veterans out there with a lot of the great charity work that he's doing. We're going to let him talk a little bit later on in the show about some upcoming events that he has a little bit later in the summer. Also, Brian Dobby, he is a PGA professional at the Montclair Golf Club up in New Jersey. So we got three guys from the Northeast on the program tonight. Looking forward. Guys, welcome to Golf Talk Live.
How are you, Ted? Thanks for having me on the show. This is Brian.
Oh, Brian. Okay, it must be Scott then. That's not on the show. Scott Millman. I was wondering. I knew there was one of you hadn't made it, and somebody was trying to call in on a different line, and I wasn't sure. And I guess that was you, Brian, that did that. Correct?
Yeah, I just got tied up teaching Ted, and I couldn't get to you, and just got on. So I'm glad I made it.
Not a problem. Then obviously Scott Millman's not with us right at the moment. Hopefully he'll be able to join us here a little bit later. But guys, let's just start with the show, anyways. And I'll keep an eye out for Scott as hopefully he'll be able to join us a little bit later on as time goes on. As I was mentioning to Scott Seiferlein, of course he was the first one on tonight. And Scott, I was mentioning what we're going to talk about tonight was about confidence. And one of the things that I think we need to do first off is really talk about what is confidence. So I'm just going to read something out very quickly here, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about it. Confidence, basically, it's a feeling. It's about trust and belief in your own abilities and decisions and expressing those beliefs and decisions in under challenging circumstances. You know the feeling of confidence. You're playing great and everything is going right for you. There is an easy belief in what you're doing. And we also know the other feeling, which is a lack of confidence, and it's where you just don't have it or nothing seems to be going right and there's little faith in what you're doing. So we obviously have confidence and we have lack of confidence. So having said that, Scott, I'm going to start with you. The first question I have is confidence proactive or reactive in most cases, do you think?
Well, that's a loaded question.
I'm throwing you under the bus.
You certainly try to make it proactive, but many cases it is very much reactive based on seeing some success and then starting to say, oh, wow, I can do that. And as you see more and more success, you say, oh, wow, I can do that. And your confidence slowly starts to build up at a higher and higher level. Certainly we would like it to be proactive. We would like it to be like the book in the Secret. And there was a movie made on that book, The Secret, about if we see it and believe it in our mind that it will happen. And I'm every day I'm confident a new red Ferrari will arrive in my driveway. But there's not one there because I still have to make the right decisions in business and in life to be able to make the kind of money that would produce a red Ferrari in my driveway. So there's a combination of we want to try and be proactive, but at the same time, confidence comes a lot of cases from seeing the result, which is reaction.
Right. Well, let me just give you, Brian, before I get you to chime in here, let me just give you an example here of really sort of the difference of proactive and reactive. A great example is, first off, great athletes tend to be proactive with their confidence. A good example, of course, is this year's Master winner, Jordan Spieth, who, of course, walking to the first tee at Augusta National before the final round. You can certainly rest assured that he was reminding himself of how well he's been playing so far in 2015, and has built a foundation really since the age of 12 that has been able to handle the sort of the lead, if you will, on Masters Sunday. So what he's done is he's done things throughout early parts of his career in preparation for that day. He knew that at some point he wanted to play in the Masters, and I don't want to say he willed himself to play, but he sort of prepared himself. And as a result, proactive confidence, just to summarize what Scott was saying, is a decision that you will be sustainably confident from all of the great positive experiences that you have in the game, and hopefully there'll be many, and all the work that you have done in your game and coaching and support from others is the foundation and belief in yourself as a golfer. Your confidence will not be shaken by small, unavoidable cycles of not playing your best. And on the other hand, there are some players out there. Brian, I want to ask you this question. Have you got an example that you can think of, maybe either on a professional level or maybe even with some of the students that you worked, where you've seen a player, maybe a top-level player, that sort of had his or her confidence shaken, and maybe you can explain a little bit what's happened and what you noticed in their a demeanor, if you will?
Sure. Ted, I think in golf, especially at a high level, I think your confidence comes from actually doing and performing and seeing the shot at hand. And I had this one player where his mechanics started getting off a little bit, and he started hitting errant shots where he usually would expect a good result. And then it kind of manifested into a bigger problem where he really couldn't hit his wedges anymore. This is what was going on. And what happened was, his mechanics were getting worse, and then he started hitting worse shots, and then his confidence would go down, and then he started to get lost. And we kind of got him back on track by refixing the mechanics, getting him some success in hitting that shot again, and we could see his confidence growing, and then started to perform under pressure and getting that success. And that would get his confidence back. But it can go either way, and, we talk about preparing mentally and being positive and stuff. We can do a lot of that, but until you actually do it, under a pressure situation that you're in, I think you're going to get more confidence from succeeding in that task, so to speak, Ted.
Yeah, exactly. Well said. Let me ask you guys this, and Scott, we'll go back to you. Obviously, we talked a little bit about this, but a lot of golfers have lost their confidence. And really, this happens every day, even among some of the best athletes in the world. For some reason, they aren't playing well, and the foundation of confidence that they built over the years suddenly disappears. A few mistakes become the basis for their confidence, and after, you know, reminders of their confidence about everything that they've achieved and all the work that they've done, there's sort of that aha moment, and the confidence mysteriously returns. Has there been a moment in your career, Scott, as an example, where whether as a player or even as an instructor, where you momentarily lost that confidence but then were able to regroup? And what were some of the things that you did in order to reestablish that?
Well, that happens multiple times a day and multiple times around frequently, and then you just is constantly in and out of this moment of confidence. Sometimes the confidence will last as many as 10 or 18 holes. I had when I was playing mini tours, my longest streak of confidence was seven consecutive rounds where my scores were in my top 10% of all my scores. And
right.
So that was extremely rare. You know, typically I would have those types of scores about 1 out of 10 times, and I had 7 in a row. So that was the longest streak I could remember of continuous, for the most part, confidence. And even within that streak, there were a few holes here and there where it would temporarily go away. And when it goes away, number one thing is you have to be patient, because it's going to happen no matter what. It's just realistic that it's going to happen, and you have to be patient and grind your way through it. I talk about in my book, The Game of Golf and the Art of Business, there's a chapter in there on grinding through the process when you're struggling, how you get through that. And oftentimes we have to think our way through the round of golf and accept the fact that we're not hitting it perfect, changing our approach slightly and playing more conservative lines as a result of the fact that we know we're not hitting it perfect, so we may play more conservative for a while until we find the rhythm back and start to gain the confidence back, and then we may, at that time, start to choose more aggressive lines.
Right, and I think it happens to everybody. Brian, what about yourself? I mean, obviously you've seen it in students. Now, what about yourself when you've been playing, whether it's in some sort of a tournament, maybe it's something at the club? Has there been moments throughout your career where you feel that your confidence was lost a little bit? And what did you do to sort of try and regain that?
Well, no doubt about that, Ted. It's, you know, I've been doing this for about 20 years now, and still playing. And, you know, golf's funny. Like Scott said, you're going to lose it. You're not going to ride that wave forever. But just to hit a point that Scott mentioned, he talked about the process. And when I find myself slipping or losing my confidence, I tend to get more goal-orientated and I forget about the process. And then I kind of catch myself saying, all right, let's just hit one shot as good as we can and try to really simplify the whole process of playing around the golf. Just hit one shot as good as I can. And that once I get my mind back on that process of let's just find the fairway here, let's get it on the green, and then you start to get that momentum back and your confidence comes back. And I think a lot of players tend to start to get too result orientated when they lose their confidence. How am I going to do this? How am I going to do that? And they forget about the small steps they need to take that they were doing when they were playing well. And I think that was a great point Scott brought up about the process. And I do that myself, and I've been playing long enough now to know when I start to slip, let's just go back to, how can I hit this shot as good as I can? Let's just take it from there.
Yeah. Scott, what actually happens, do you think, that causes, what are some of the things that cause a golfer to lose their confidence? What actually happens, do you think? That was for Scott.
Bad shots. That's pretty simple. Bad shots cause you to lose confidence. But I think back to one of my rounds. This was
Well, it was not too many years ago, but actually it was quite a few years ago when I was in college, and I was playing in this tournament on my college team, and I was 8 over par through 14 holes, and it's just a lot of bad shots. You don't have a whole lot of confidence. But on that 14th hole, I was still grinding and still trying to stay patient with the round, starting to think at that point that I wasn't going to be able to help my team, or it was unlikely that my score would even count. And all of a sudden, I made this 10-footer on the 14th hole, just grinding out a solid par there, and something clicked, and I just had this little good feeling, like I was all of a sudden at ease, and I had worked my way through the process, and on the 15th hole, I hit a halfway decent shot, and I made another nice putt, and so I made birdie there, and then I really, the next hole was an easy par 5, so I make birdie there, and so now I have 2 birdies in a row, plus a good par save. Now, at this point, I actually felt like I had some confidence, some real confidence. And the 17th hole was a tough hole, hit a great shot, made birdie there, and then 18th hole, another par 5, made birdie there. So I birdied the last 4 holes, end up 4 over, still not a great score, but I was able to contribute by being the 5th score in on my team, so the other 4 were obviously better. But if I wouldn't have been able to grind my way through that process and get to that point where all of a sudden I started to have some confidence and I got hot with birdieing the last 4 holes, the 6th man on our team was in the 80s, so we would have had to take that score instead of my score as 76. That's a good example right there of how, like I mentioned before, having patience and continuing to grind on every hole, and eventually something good's going to happen. Maybe it's not going to happen in that particular round, but eventually it's going to happen. In that particular round, it worked out. I got hot, got into the zone, got some confidence, and it worked out that time.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting to when you think about it, guys, how you're able to, and I think obviously that falls in with experience. I think the more experience that you sort of have under your belt, I think, I won't say it's necessarily easier, but you seem to be able to get that confidence back. I think as a younger golfer, you tend to be a little bit more aggressive in your play, and you know, confidence isn't something you really think about. It's just, okay, I want to hit the ball as far as I can, I want to get it out there, and you really don't develop into a pattern. But I think as you become a little bit more seasoned of a golfer, you start to you know, feel more confident that you're going to be able to execute certain shots. You know your play, how well you play or how well you don't play in certain areas of your game a little bit better by that point, say after a few years of out there grinding it. And I think that your confidence level builds up. What about other distractions, guys? And Brian, I'm going to let you start off here. What about other distractions? Can they affect confidence? And I'll give you an example. You know, you're playing in a tournament, and suddenly, you know, the weather sort of whips up, and now you've got a strong wind, or maybe, you know, you're hitting more into a few bunkers. You're maybe not a strong bunker player. Can sometimes, not necessarily a bad shot, but conditions shatter your confidence a little bit? How about that, Brian?
Definitely it can, Ted. What one thing I've tried to do through the years is try to turn a negative into a positive, and say we're playing in bad weather or windy conditions. I try to say to myself, you know what, I know I'm going to have the wind in my face on some holes, but some holes I'm going to have it with me or right to left or whatever. And I kind of like that, because I know conditions like that are going to eliminate most of the players that I'm competing against in a tournament. So there's less guys you have to beat. The ones that you have to worry about, they're not letting that stuff bother them. So I've learned to kind of accept the conditions and try to turn it into a favorable situation for me mentally, and then just play it out. And I think that's what golf's all about. Try to find something good in each shot you hit or each situation you're in, instead of letting it get your confidence or make you hit a bad shot. Try to just focus on those things you can control and not the things you can. And obviously the weather is something you can't control. You can prepare for it, but
sure,
you really can't control it. So I've learned through the years to find something good about whatever situation in my mind, and then all of a sudden, you know what, I can deal with it a little bit better if I have that mindset, so to speak.
Right, right. Well said. Can we teach techniques on how to regain confidence, do you think, guys? Yes, no?
I'll jump in on that one. Yeah, I think the answer is yes, but I think it really depends on the task at hand for the level of player. So you want to get somebody at whatever level they're at to start doing things that they're capable of doing, hitting certain shots that they're capable of doing, and all of a sudden they're getting those successes we've been talking about, and that's going to raise their confidence. You don't want them trying to execute shots that are a little beyond their ability or ones they haven't hit, and that's going to actually work in the opposite direction. So I think yes, as long as the task is up to their ability so they can build off of that.
Right. Well said again. We obviously know that we can so how do we build a golfer's confidence is really the million-dollar question. How do we do that? How do we help a golfer? Certain things obviously can be learned on their own, and it is up to the individual because it is technically an individual sport, even though there are some team situations, as Scott talked about earlier. But essentially, we're playing on our own and under our own ability and our own steam. So we have to find ways of building that confidence, but that doesn't mean a good coach or teacher can't help along the way. So some of the things that you need to do, and I'm going to talk about them here, and guys, I'm going to get you to jump in and talk about them individually a little bit. It's important to continually build the foundation so small short-term failures won't penetrate your long-term foundation. So here are some things that we can do to work on your confidence and build it. So here's, as I said, a few key ideas. Scott, I'm going to start with you, and then Brian, I'll sort of rotate off with some of the others as well. Preparation, as they say, build it and it will come. What are some things from a preparatory standpoint can you do to help build somebody's confidence?
Well, having a routine, number one, that's a great way to prepare. So you're consistent in your routine before each shot. You're also consistent before the round on the systems that you put in place, what you do, the timing of those systems. Those are all things that are very important. And preparation is a great word. I'm thinking back to, I believe it was maybe your 2010-2011 era when the Oregon Ducks first became number one in the nation in football. And their coach, they had a game on ESPN that night, and their coach was interviewed before the game. Chip Kelly was their coach at that time. Mm-hmm. And the reporter said, are your players feeling any pressure playing in their first game as a number one ranked team in the nation? And without any hesitation, he looked at her and he said, pressure is what you feel when you are not prepared. And I was like,
right.
Wow, that's just right there. Boom, there it is. Absolutely, you must be prepared. And so that's a great word that you use there. And the more prepared you are, the more you're going to have a routine and system in place, and then it's so much easier to be confident, number one, that you're doing the right things, you're following the right processes. And then when things start to go sideways on you, you can stick to that routine. You can go back. Okay, I'm going back to my routine, and let's stay focused on the process. And when you follow that system, you can get the confidence back quicker than you normally could if you didn't have that routine, that preparation, and follow that system.
Right, and very well said as well, Scott. Thank you. Brian, how about, again, we talked about this a few moments back, about being proactive. What are some of the ways, I can think of one here, making your practice functional and relatable to the shots you might need on the course? For a competition, having a plan. What are some things, talk a little bit about being proactive. In other words, what do we do proactively to help build our confidence? That some of the things that we're going to do physically or even mentally to build our confidence.
Well, Ted, since you brought up the word practice, there's an old saying I go by, practice like you play and play like you practice. Okay, and what that means is, if I'm hitting balls on the range, I switch targets after each shot. I switch clubs after each shot and try to simulate around of golf. I try to practice like I play. So in terms of preparation, when I go out and play, I've already kind of rehearsed it and stuff. And I think a lot of people tend to get away from that when they go to the range and maybe their confidence is down a little bit and they're trying to find something, but try to make it more fun also. You know, when we lose our confidence, we're not having any fun anymore. And
right.
And what I'll do is to, like, shock a player, hey, let's go out and play nine holes and only bring three or four clubs with us. So that's forcing us to hit certain shots, okay? And then it also forces us to make less decisions. If I only have four or five clubs with me, all of a sudden, hey, I've got to hit this one, or maybe we'll bring our five favorite clubs or four favorite clubs, and all of a sudden you start to hit shots and your game starts to come back, and you're having more fun too, and that'll raise your confidence level. I think when our confidence is down, I don't think anybody's having fun with golf, whether they're competing or playing recreationally. But you have to get that element back, and but with the shots or clubs that you're comfortable with, get the tension out of your mind and start playing again and build off of that. There's many ways to do it, but I think practicing like you play and play like you
yep.
practice goes a long way. You know, because when our confidence is down, we're overthinking things. We're over. We want to think less. We want to try less. We want to use our creative side a little bit more, I think, and that'll help bring back the confidence.
Yeah, excellent point. Scott, just to talk about Jordan very quickly again, Jordan Spieth, of course, won the 2015 Masters tournament this year. Jordan obviously believed in Jordan Spieth's ability to play Augusta, and of course the results followed. He won the tournament. How important is it to understand your strengths and limitations and your triggers and you know, in your everyday play, but how important it is those areas, understanding where your strengths and weaknesses are and what your limitations are in your golf game? How is that going to help you as a player understanding those areas of your game?
It helps you play a lot smarter. It helps you stay more patient. When you make good decisions, stay patient. Play smart shots. You can play aggressive lines to conservative targets. You're playing aggressively but within yourself. And that way, when you make aggressive swings but they're to safe conservative targets within yourself, you're playing shots that you know you can hit. It gives you more confidence. When you're playing shots that you're like, well, maybe I can pull this off, but maybe it's high risk, then it puts a lot of pressure on you. And certainly once in a while you're going to pull that off, but more often than not, you're not going to pull that off. And as you hit more and more shots, you don't pull off. Your confidence slides.
Sure.
It's hard to get it back. I have in my book, The Game of Golf and Art of Business, there's a chapter 5 is on the 90%, I call it the 90% escape rule. But it can be applied to... It really could be applied to any golf shot that you're going to hit. And the rule is that if you're in the trees, you want to look for an escape area that you believe you could pull it off at least 9 times out of 10. So, I understand there's some risk in every shot in golf, but we want to have – that's my example of picking a conservative line that you can be aggressive with. You want to be confident that 9 out of 10 times you play that shot, you're going to be able to pull it off. If not – you need to pick a different line, a different type of shot. Pick one that you believe you can pull off 9 out of 10 times. And that when you use that concept and that idea, it becomes much more it builds confidence. And I know Butch Harmon worked with Phil Mickelson on that, where Phil would hit shots that he believed that, I mean, I guess Phil believes he can pull anything off, but he was hitting shots that he might be able to pull off 4 out of 10 times, 2
right.
out of 10 times. Obviously, with somebody like Phil, you're not going to be able to convince him to play conservative lines all the time and hit a 9 out of 10 shot all the time. But I really believe that Butch got him from a majors standpoint to play in the majors. More often he was playing shots he could at least pull off 6 to 8 times out of 10 versus a lot of
right.
the shots that he had prior 2, 4 out of 10 times. So that helped his confidence in majors significantly.
Yeah, and I think, too, it goes back to what Brian talked about, you know, being proactive as well. I think understanding your strengths by getting out there and practicing both on the course and while you're on the course, practice, on the range, if you will. I think what it does is it gives you an idea of where the strong points of your game are. If, as I mentioned earlier, if you're maybe somebody, if bunker shots are something that are a little bit scarier, those are things that you need to be working on when you're on the range. Obviously, you know, hopefully you're going to be confident enough when you get on the golf course to handle those. But if you're not, don't be practicing all the time your go-to shots while you're on the range. I mean, anybody can do that, and that's certainly they have to be practiced. And, you know, if hitting a power fade is something that's in your repertoire, by all means, you want to keep working on that. But don't spend 85% of your time hitting that power fade and spending 5% of your time or 10% of your time on all the other shots that you don't hit so well, because what's going to happen, you get out on that golf course and you're, you know, 95% of the time, all those other shots you're not practicing are going to happen when you're out there. Brian, what about great coaching? Obviously, you know, I think it's good to have a great coach at your side or a teacher in some case, teaching you some of the fundamentals and teaching you how to prepare yourself when you're out the coast. Give us some examples of things that a good coach or great teacher can do to help you gain that confidence.
Well, I think the first thing a coach is going to do for any student or player is get them to relax a little bit so they're not so hard on themselves. You know, typically when we lose our confidence, we tend to beat ourselves up a little mentally. But if you were the coach and you had a player performing like you were doing, what would you say to them? You would say, you know what, it's okay, let's try that again, and try to encourage them to, you know, get back to the process and hitting a good shot, trying to not have them beat themselves up so much, you know. So I think a good coach would definitely direct that student or player in that direction. The other thing is, like, I think a good coach would be, try to take the pressure off the player. Hey, let's, you know, if you knew you were going to play good in your next 5-6 events, would you really be worrying about how you're playing right now? All right, so
right.
There's a technique that I typically will give to somebody. Hey, you know, right now isn't so important. If you knew you were going to perform well or win a tournament down the road, would you really be worrying about this right now? And you'd answer yourself, no. And so all of a sudden, a good coach is just going to get you back into the present a little bit with your thinking, relax you, try to make it more fun, try to make it less stress-free for the player. And if you've been working with that player or coach a while, you're going to know each other's nuances and stuff. And
right.
That's how I would bring them. I would just, let's take the pressure off. Something, you know, let's make it easier, more less tension on the subconscious, and just start playing and having fun. Be a better coach to yourself, you know. And if you don't have a coach, be a better coach to yourself. How would you talk to yourself in a coach's way?
Right. And you can, you know, there's a lot of things that you can do. And that's a great point, because not everybody's out there necessarily taking lessons or working with a coach and for one reason or another. And obviously, I think that, you know, if you want to be a better, more accomplished player, I think it's a good idea. There's a lot of great professionals out there that you can certainly find doing a quick search on the internet. You can certainly find, and then obviously you don't want to just take the first one that comes along. You maybe want to go and interview them a little bit. We've talked about that on shows before. You know, you want to interview that person. But I think the main thing, too, that a coach has to be, it's not just about teaching golf or teaching how to play out there, but there has to be a sense, and Brian, you touched a little bit about this, where the player, the coach believes in their abilities as a player. And that goes a long way in helping bolster confidence in that player. If he knows that coach believes in him or her, that can make a huge difference. If they feel that the coach is not really confident in that individual's ability and it sort of comes through, then what I want to be able to do is I want to be able to reassure that player that, that you know, I trust that their decisions, I trust what they're doing, and in areas that I know that they're weak, then I'm going to try and help them with that in order to gain some a comfort level so that we can add that to the pile, if you will. One of the other things, Scott, and we kind of talked a little bit about this, is we want to be able to create a clear and defined goal or plan. So, and I'm talking, of course, about the player. So this is something that a coach or a teacher can do. So, Scott, talk about something that the coach can do to help you as a player create a clear goal and define what goal do you want to have in your play, and let's get a game plan together. So let's talk about a little bit about that.
Well, that changes significantly depending on the level of the player, and it goes back to your comments about the coaches being confident in the player. Coaches have to adapt to every level of a player, and they have to adapt quickly, especially if they're coaching one after another on an hourly basis like a lot of them do. So you may have a situation where you're working with somebody who might be a 60 handicap in 1 hour, and then a 4 handicap in another, and a 30 handicap in another hour. And you have to be confident with the 60 handicapper that they have the ability to become a 50 handicapper, because you're probably not going to have the confidence that they're going to be a plus 3 anytime soon when they're a 60 handicap. So you have to shift your mindset on how you can let them know that you're confident in them, that they're going to achieve certain benchmarks.
Right.
And then obviously with the 4 handicapper, you have to be confident and they have to know that you're confident that they may potentially be a 3 or a plus 3 if they put the right systems in place. So I think that's important for the coaches out there, that they have to dramatically shift their mindset when they're working with different levels of players. As far as putting systems into place to be able to achieve those goals, there's one system that I use, and I teach about 15% of my clients are brand-new golfers who have been told by their company that they should be playing in a company outing and playing some business golf. They've never played before. They have no confidence. They don't even have confidence in where to park and how to drive a golf cart and which end of the club to hold and all that. So I take them right away over to the putting green, because the putting green is the area you can get confidence the fastest. And unlike traditional coaching, where people are taught the grip, the stance, the alignment, and the posture, and they're taught the setup processes, I don't teach setup right away. I put them at 1 foot, and I teach speed control. Because if you can start to establish some speed control with a new golfer, you're putting a system in place where they can quickly gain confidence. And I use a 5 or better rule. You have to score 5 or better from inside of 50 yards before we do anything else. So I'm working with a new golfer right now at this moment, and she is so confident early on in her ability. We're just 3 sessions in. We've gone through speed control and putting from inside of 5 feet. We've gone through aim point green reading strategies, so she understands how to quickly read the green, even as a new golfer, with her feet. And then she understands how to control distance now on longer putts. We've gone 25, 30 feet. So she's gaining that confidence that she can for sure make 3 putts, and oftentimes make 2 putts from pretty much anywhere on the green, and she's only 3 weeks into learning the game. So that's an example of a process that I have in place for newer golfers. And now that we're in third week, we're starting to go off the green, hit some chips, and some 15, 20, and 25-yard pitches.
Yeah, that's a great thing. You know, I like that. And that's one of the, reasons that, Scott, I talked to you when we were off air about, one of the reasons why I like doing this program is, this is a great way not just to help the students that might be tuning into the program, but also some of the other coaches that might be looking for ways to help, new ways to help their students. As opposed to some of the traditional things that we've all sort of been taught over the years. And there's certainly, there's nothing wrong with that sort of traditional things that we've been taught. But I think sometimes we have to learn new ways of engaging with the students. Otherwise, it gets a little bit too, boring and monotonous. Brian, what about yourself? What sort of things with some of the members there at Montclair do you do to try and create a plan? You've got some players that maybe play in the club championships, or you've got maybe some corporate events and things like that. I know that you've got players as well that you like to get a game plan put in place to help them maintain their confidence, so that when they get into these events, they're not sort of falling apart. So give us maybe an example, if you will, and certainly you're welcome to reference a student. You don't have to give any specific names, but maybe some students that you've worked with where you've had to do similar to what Scott has done. What are some things that you've done at Montclair?
Well, one of the things I've done, and the students I've had for a while now, I do a lot of evaluating with my students, specifically in the short game. Like I've given most of my students a short game test. It's a 100-shot test, and I've got to give credit to Jerry Tucker down in Florida. Jerry, I was lucky enough to know him and take lessons from him, and he taught me his short game testing. But through the evaluation, I can pinpoint the strengths and weaknesses in somebody's game. And my students that I've had a while, we have something to go back on and say, okay, your wedge game is way off here, or your sand game's off, or we need to work on your lag putting or your short putting and stuff. And then that gives us a little game plan of, okay, what do we need to attack to make the hole better? Okay, maybe a few of the pieces of the golf game are a little off, and let's work on those, and then and all of a sudden the hole gets better, and that's going to get the scores down, get the confidence going, and stuff like that. So my game plan for any of my students is find out where they stand through some type of evaluation, and then, all right, this is what we need to work on. This is going to give us our starting point. And then establish some short-term and long-term goals for them to reach. So maybe if their putting average is over 36 putts a round, let's say the next five rounds or so, let's try to get that down to, you know, under 36, maybe 33 putts a round, and give them these mini games to play or mini goals during the round. You know, let's hit. If we're averaging five or six fairways, let's try to get six or seven. And if we're only hitting four or five greens, let's try to hit six or seven next time. So play these games within the game and try to hit these little mini goals. And all of a sudden, by doing that, your scores are going to be coming down. So that's how I game plan with my students at Montclair. And we try to play little games within the game of the 18 holes, Ted.
Excellent answers, both Scott and Brian. Thank you for that. You know, I think one of the reasons I wanted to talk about confidence is, you know, it's very easy to focus on, you know, making good shots and focusing on the physical part of the game. But emotions play, as we all know, as we learn, as more and more of this becomes available in the golf industry about emotions and about inner feelings and things like that, how greatly it can affect the game. And I think that one of the things that can really affect the game is our own internal voice. And I want each of you to sort of maybe touch on this a little bit. Scott, I'll start with you. Obviously, we want to be able to create a positive, supportive internal voice. What are some things that you do yourself and that you do to help encourage the students to have that, because that can make or break a golfer, in my opinion. If they're not able to sort of create that positive reinforcement inside, and they're constantly negative and negative thoughts coming in, it's going to be very difficult to overcome some of the challenges they might. So I want each of you to just take a moment, if you will, and talk about that. Scott, starting with you, and then Brian to follow.
Yeah, I go back now as an experienced player. I've had many successful golf shots, and I remember those. I don't remember any of the bad ones I hit. So I always go back and replay those good ones and what that feeling was like and what kind of mindset I had during those golf shots, and then I try and reproduce that in different scenarios. But I want to step back just for one second and give
sure.
a plug to Brian on the short game testing assessment system. If anybody out there listening is in the New Jersey area, they could really seek out Brian for that assessment. Or any golf instructor in your area that does short game assessments. Those are very powerful. I use Charlie King's short game handicapping system, and it's a great way. I highly recommend your listeners to go out and find an instructor who does short game assessments. Very powerful and very revealing as well. But back to your question on,
sure.
on how I create that confidence. And I pick shots that I've hit before. A couple years ago, I was playing this tournament, and I had been working on what I would consider, I guess your listeners would consider it, a power fade, where it's still a very strong ball flight, but the ball moves a few yards to the right and it lands soft on the green. And I'd been overhooking that whole summer, and so I was working on just hitting as strong as I could, hit power fades. And I started to build some confidence in practice, and I would take it out on the course in some practice rounds. And then I was in this tournament where I had to hit this golf shot in the very last hole. We were tied for the lead. It was a team event. And the pin was tucked on the right over a bunker, and it had only about a five-yard landing area that I had to deal with. The greens were a little bit firm, so I had to hit that shot under pressure. And I went back before I hit that shot. As I was visualizing that shot, I was picturing the shots that I had hit in practice successfully pulling off that type of ball flight, and I could just see it perfectly. It's like the baseball players who tell you that they're in so much of a zone that they can literally see the threads on the baseball as it's coming at them 90 miles per hour. It looks like it's coming in slow motion. And that's how I felt hitting that golf shot. And it carried the bunker by about 3 yards, took one skip forward, and stopped on a dime a foot from the hole. And
wow.
I really feel like the vision I had prior to hitting that shot, by pulling back, pulling from the other shots that I had successfully pulled off executing that, helped a lot. It was not an easy shot for me because I can easily draw it and I can tend to overhook it. And so that the tucked right flag was a tough location for me, but I was able to pull that off by utilizing that vision of and being prepared, going back to the preparedness that we talked about earlier.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's my answer to that question.
And obviously, you know, when you're able to you know, create those types of shots through obviously trial and error, both on the range and while you're out there playing for fun, you're able to build that inner voice, if you will, and sort of be able to reassure yourself to say, hey, I know I can do this, and I feel, you know, confident that I can execute this shot. So that internal voice, excuse me, that internal voice is able to you know, mimic what you physically able to do. It's able to now reinforce with good thought patterns and that. Brian, what about you as well? What are some things that you've done? And again, if you want to use a student, that's fine. To help sort of create that positive imagery in not only in your mind but also that internal voice. What are some things that you've said to yourself to be able to reinforce your confidence?
Sure, Ted. Well, first thing I want to reiterate what Scott was saying about having a long-term memory on your good shots and a short-term memory on your bad shots. And I always stress that with my students, and they sometimes they tend to dwell on the bad shots. But tell me about a couple good shots you had, and then all of a sudden you start feeling good about it. But definitely for your golf listeners out there, long-term memory on the good shots goes a long way, and the short-term memory on the bad shots. That's number one. The second thing is I like to use this phrase with my students after they hit a tee shot. You get to the ball and say, "What's the par from here?" And always give yourself two putts. And all of a sudden, that one question brings you back into the moment of where your ball is, and it starts the process over. And I always say, what's the par from here into that hole? And how then the next question is, how am I going to play the hole now? If it gets you to think realistically about your abilities that day. You might not be hitting it good. Maybe it's a par four from here instead of a par three or whatever. And then all of a sudden it gets you thinking about playing the shots, staying in the process. I think that's really important. And then, again, to reiterate what Scott was talking about, you know, visualizing and recalling past performances is so important. I think golf is played, when you get to a certain level, especially competitive level, golf is played with your memory and recall and hitting shots you've hit before, and you tend to recall them before you hit the actual shot. That's part of your pre-shot routine, is to recall something, see it happening, and then go in and do it again. So that definitely gets you out of the result orientated part of the game. You want to have process goals instead of result goals, and And those are a couple things I do, Ted. Visualizing long-term memory on the good ones and what's the par from here also keeps you away from big numbers, you know, the doubles and triples. It kind of grounds you and says, all right, at worst, I might make a bogey here, but it's going to keep me from making that shot that's going to cause a big number. And that's part of scoring low. You can't have those doubles and triples for in your round of golf. Those are a couple things I would do.
Excuse me. Exactly. And I agree. Again, both excellent comments, guys. Thank you very much for that. I'm not going to really talk about focusing on the good shots because we've covered that quite a bit here throughout the process. And we've only got a few minutes left here. But I do want to say this, on good shots. Ben Hogan, who certainly was considered to be one of the greatest, if not the greatest, ball striker of all time. And again, it depends on who you ask. But he felt he hit about maybe 5 to 6 shots that were great in a round that he felt were great. Obviously had many misses, which we all have. But he agrees, or certainly agreed with what both of you have said, and that is to focus on your good shots and accept that there are certainly going to be some misses, but don't dwell on them. And I think, and I'm sure you both would agree, this is probably one of the biggest areas of problem. Everybody focuses on being the best ball striker and being able to hit the perfect shot, and there really is no perfect shot as far as I'm concerned. There's a perfect shot for the moment, perhaps, but there's been a lot of players over the years that didn't have the greatest swing, maybe, didn't execute the best shot but had a great result nevertheless. And I think what happens is the average golfer out there tends to focus on all of the really bad shots out there. And, you know, we'll certainly talk when they get in the clubhouse about that great shot they hit on hole number 4. But they don't play that in their internal Rolodex, if you will, later on for the next tournament or the next round that they're playing. And they seem to forget that and focus on all the bad shots. I think that we've talked about that, but do you agree with that, guys, that generally as a rule that I think that's one of the problems that most golfers face is they're focusing too much on the negative side of their game and not focusing, as both of you have indicated, on their good shots and using that as a springboard to playing well?
Absolutely. And, I mean, golf's a funny game like that, even with athletes that have succeeded in other sports. I'm reminded of a quote by Yogi Berra. He said, one time I was complaining that my shot was going to wind up in the water. So my friend Kevin Carroll told me that I should think positive. And I told him, okay, I was positive my shot was going to end up in the water.
Yeah, that's true. I remember hearing that. And that's true. That's what happens is, we've seen it many times with students that we've worked with. And you'll try to get into their minds and say, okay, what are you seeing here? What are you visualizing? And the first thing they're talking about is all the trouble and all the negative aspects instead of saying, okay, this is the shot that I need to execute. Here's how I'm going to execute it. And then have a positive game plan, if you will, for that particular shot. They're always focusing on, well, the bunkers are over there. I see some water out there. True or not? Is that not what we hear most of the time when we're working with students, Brian?
No question on that, Ted. And I, what I do with my students, we're not going to block out the trouble. We're aware of it, but after you pinpoint that, get more specific on where you want your ball to go instead of where you don't want your ball to go. And then all of a sudden, okay, I want my ball to go there. Let's get specific with a target, and then start working from the hole back. Or the shot back, thinking, okay, what's my shot shape here? Is it going to be a little draw, fade, or whatever? And then what kind of club face am I going to deliver to produce that draw or fade? And all of a sudden the process goes into a more of a creative mode instead of seeing the shot from where it lands back to you. And then all of a sudden your setup kind of changes for the draw or the fade. And then before you know it, you're swinging into what you're imagining. And I think most amateur players tend to not focus on the target enough, not visualize the shot trajectory and height. And they're more worried about you know, getting from point A of the address position to point B of the backswing, and they're forgetting about the target isn't the ball. It's where you want the ball to end up, and sort of work backwards. So I like to have my students see this little movie in their mind from where they want the ball to end up back to the club and work that way. It tends to work very well. I use that technique myself.
Very well said. Scott, we just have a moment here, and then we're going to end the segment. But any final thoughts that you'd like to share with the listeners out there on building confidence?
Yeah, this is a great topic. And just going back to the preparation, there's a lot of listeners out there that might be really good at what they do in their profession, and they're frustrated because they go out on the golf course and they expect those same results, but they forget how much they toiled in their profession before they started to see that success.
Sure.
And start breaking those millions. It's the same with myself. I am adventuring out into some new business ventures, and I have a consultant that works with me all the time on mindset. He says, you can't think like that. You have to think like this is going to work. And you can't get frustrated when people tell you no and don't buy from you in your new venture. You have to look at a no as, that was cool. Now I know how to not do that again. Now I'm going to make an adjustment and work my way towards a yes. So he's constantly working with me on my mindset because I have the mindset in this new business venture probably like about a 28 handicapper would about their golf game. And
sure.
So it's very easy for a golfer to fall into that trap just because they haven't had the preparedness, they haven't had the experience, they haven't had enough no's, or in other words, enough golf balls going in the water and enough chances to make the corrections for them to gain the confidence. So you have to stick with it and continue the right processes. Make sure you're working with a coach who you communicate well with and who it helps you become more positive that you can go from a 28 handicap to a 26. Then you can go from a 26 to a 23 and so on and so forth. And
right.
Continue that process of gaining more and more confidence every year that you play this great game of golf.
Well said, and what a great way to end the segment. Thank you, Scott, and thank you, Brian, as well, as always, for joining in on the Coach's Corner panel. And as I said earlier on, I wanted to talk about something. You know, it's great to talk about things to fix the swing, and it's great to talk about some of these great products that are out there that people can use. But I think people also have to understand that there's more to the game than just the physical side of things. There's, as I mentioned earlier, the emotional side of the game. And Scott, as you just talked about, when we start in our careers in business, whatever it may be, whether it's a golf career or some other business career, there's a learning curve. And there's always going to be some successes along the way, but there more often than not, there's going to be a lot of failures first. And I think the key thing, and it certainly applies to the golf game, the number one thing I think is if you, no matter how often you may have failed at something, as long as you learn something from that failure, then you're going to have successes at a later point. And I think that we have to look at whatever happens in our life, good or bad, we have to learn from that and say, okay, how can I apply that, or how can I do something different and learn from that experience? And that happens also in the golf course. So some great points, guys, some great discussion. Thank you. Unfortunately, Scott Millman wasn't able to join us tonight, but that's okay. You two certainly carried the topic through, and thank you very much. Scott, I'm going to start with you. Just take a moment or two, if you will, just let everybody know if they're interested in reaching out to you or if they want to maybe get a hold of some of the books that you offer, how they can go about doing that.
Yes, best way is GrandRapidsGolfLesson.com. All the books are on there, all the information about coaching and the processes that we go through. That's, again, GrandRapidsGolfLesson.com.
Perfect. And Scott, also, if they're interested in connecting with you for any of the physical part of the game, if they're interested in lessons or signing up, they can also get all that information right from their website as well, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, perfect. Brian, if you want to just take a moment for those, if you want to give a shout out or anything to the members of the club that might be tuning in, and also let those know how they can get in touch with you as well.
Sure, Ted. First off, I just want to mention to Scott that for all the listeners out there, I've had a chance to personally talk with Scott, and he's helped me with some ideas, and he's got some great information out there to share with you. So give Scott a call. It'd be well worth it. Well, if anybody would want to get in touch with me that they're in the New Jersey area, you can reach me at Montclair Golf Club. Our number there is 973-239-0160. And if you want to reach out to me personally, my email address is briandobbypga@yahoo.com. And if you're up in the Northeast here, if you're looking for help with your short game, I'd be glad to take a look at you or work on your full swing, and I'd be glad to help you out. And Ted, shout out to you. I've been lucky enough to be on your show a few times now, and believe me, I learned more from your guests during the night than they're ever going to learn from me. So it's always an opportunity for me to listen along as I answer your questions. So I really appreciate the opportunity, Ted. Thank you so much.
Well, not a problem. And guys, I appreciate you giving of your time as well. I know that you're all busy, and I appreciate the fact that, you know, taking an hour of your time here is from family, away from family and friends, and obviously clients and things like that sometimes can be difficult. But I appreciate you guys for pitching in. And I know that the listeners, of course, always appreciate. So, guys, Scott Seiferline and Brian Dobby, thank you very much for being on the Coach's Corner panel tonight. And have a great week, guys. And I will see you back here next time on Coach's Corner and on Golf Talk Live. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ted. Good night, Scott.
All right.
Thanks.
Okay, that was my special guest. As I said, Scott Seiferline, PGA Golf Guru up in the Grand Rapids, Michigan area, and also Brian Dobby up in New Jersey at the Montclair Golf Club in New Jersey. What a great couple of professionals. Always enjoy having them on the show doing the Coach's Corner segment. And tonight we talked about, as we alluded to several times, about confidence, how to build confidence in your game. Very important part of the game. It's not just all about ball striking and hitting great shots. It's about having the confidence to execute those shots when they're needed. And also just to have confidence and get out there and, as they both said, have fun and enjoy the game. Very important to do that. So we're glad that you're tuned in and listening to that. And if you weren't able to join us for the live broadcast, maybe tune in a little bit later, you can go to blogtalkradio.com and just type in Golf Talk Live, excuse me, and you can either join in now or you can listen to the broadcast in its entirety. It is auto-recorded. Of course, we are live right now until 8 p.m., but you can certainly go in there, excuse me, and listen to the full recorded version later. So if you missed the Coach's Corner panel and you're just tuning in now, stay tuned. I've got a great guest coming up here in just a moment. I'm going to bring him out here in just a second. But you can go and listen to the Coach's Corner panel as well, discussion on how to build confidence. Remember, don't forget, you can always call in anytime during the live broadcast from 6 to 8 p.m. Central Time. The number is area code 646-716-4667. You can also email any questions or comments to me personally at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. And if you're interested in following on Facebook, go to facebook.com/golftalklive blog. Add the blog on the end there. And always update the show and programs there, so you'll see who's going to be on the show that particular evening. And also, don't forget to follow me on Twitter at TedAndBuckCEO. CEO, of course, is in capitals. And you can also visit the website at golftalkliveblog.com. And check out any of the information there. Some great books that have been on discussed on the show, and also some other guests that have been on here as well. As I mentioned, I got a great guest earlier in the program. I mentioned I got a great guest joining me here in just a moment. Brian Dixon, he's with the Wyndham Vacation Ownership, and we're going to talk about a great tournament that's coming up here in just a couple of weeks on May 14th, I believe, benefiting the Ann Stork Center. And I'll tell you just a little bit about that, but let me bring Brian on. He's been very patiently waiting here in the background, so we'll bring him on the show and welcome him here. Good evening, Brian, and welcome to Golf Talk Live.
Hey, Ted, how are you? Great to be on.
I'm doing very well. Thank you for joining me this evening, and we're going to talk about great golf tournament that you're involved with. But let me just read a little bit about the tournament itself, and then also about the charity that, of course, it's going to be benefiting. And then we'll talk about your role and how Wyndham plays a role in it as well as the presenter. First off, the tournament, as I mentioned, it's the fifth annual Mike Campbell golf tournament, and it's benefiting the Ann Stork Center. It's organized, of course, as I mentioned, by Wyndham Vacation Ownership, and it's taking part Thursday, May 14th of this year at the Woodlands Country Club down in Florida. And it's the registration's 6:30 a.m. and the shotgun start at 8 a.m. And let me just tell you a little bit about the Ann Stork Center, and then Brian, you and I will talk a little bit more in depth. The Ann Stork Center, of course, is a private 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to serving individuals, both children and adults, with developmental disabilities. Named after its founder, of course, Ann Stork, a nurse who lovingly opened her home up to care for children with disabilities back in the late 50s. The Ann Stork Center has expanded throughout Broward County and now includes multiple group homes, two intermediate care facilities, an adult day training program, and an early intervention preschool. So a lot of great work and a very worthwhile charity. First question, Brian, that I've got for you, obviously, let's talk about first who Mike Campbell was and how he sort of became involved with the Ann Stork Center.
Sure, absolutely, and thanks again for having me on. Mike worked for us for Wyndham Vacation Ownership for quite a few years. He was the area chief engineer, and essentially, you know, what Mike was responsible for is making sure that all of our resorts run, you know, to a high level. So he oversaw all of our resorts in South Florida, as well as in the Caribbean. Mike just had what we call in Wyndham a count on me spirit, and you know. He took his spare time to take care of our associates, to make sure that they had everything that they needed in their personal lives, as well as in work. You know, one of the great things that Mike had done for us is back in the I think it was about 2010, Hurricane Earl had gone through and just wiped out our resorts down in the Caribbean. That was, of course, one of Mike's regions. And, you know, we had a number of associates down there that had no running water at their homes, that had no power, that, you know, were just in a very, very difficult situation. You know, when something like that happens, it's easy for, you know, Mike lives in South Florida. It's easy for Mike to, you know, get on the next plane and come on over to South Florida and you know, get back in his, you know, nice air-conditioned home and those things. But he chose to stay. And it really just shows the count on me spirit and the concern that he had for the community, as well as for our associates. Mike made sure that the resorts got back up and running, that we were able to house our associates and give them roofs over their heads, that they had running water, and that you know, that we could further our business down there. But mostly it was about taking care of the St. Thomas community and taking care of our associates. So Mike relocated to the island for about 10 months to really put it back together. And, you know, we decided to name this tournament after Mike. He unfortunately passed away in 2011. And we named the tournament after Mike in his honor. And he was just an amazing person that you know, his spirit lives on. So.
Well, fantastic. What a great way to honor and give tribute to a gentleman that's obviously believed in giving back to so many people and certainly, you know, kudos to your organization and others for doing that. So let me ask you, Brian, then how did obviously the tournament came about to be able to give back? How did the Ann Stork Center sort of come about as the charity involved?
Well, so when Mike was in South Florida, the Ann Stork Center was one of the places that just held a big place in his heart. And, you know, Wyndham Vacation Ownership and Wyndham Worldwide has a very large philanthropic program that we participate in. It's called Wishes by Wyndham. And, you know, Mike would organize his team of engineers. Again, he was a regional chief engineer, so he had a lot of gentlemen and ladies that you know, were good in certain trades, right, air conditioning, electrician, carpentry, those sort of things. And Mike would organize his teams, and they would go over there and give their time. They would donate their time to go over and do as many projects at the Ann Stork campus in Fort Lauderdale that they could. They completed things like landscaping projects. They did a lot of beautifying type of work in the children's playground. We continue a lot of that work now even a few years after Mike passed, and again, we do it in his honor. The we've painted now, I think, about four of the exteriors of their buildings around their campus. We've painted the inside of the preschool. He had his team go over there one day. The air conditioning broke down. He had his team go over there, and they did a big air conditioning project and got it back up and running all on their own time. So, you know, we continue that count on me spirit for the Ann Stork Center, because it was a big place that Mike had in his heart. And we want to make sure that even after his passing, that we're able to continue that and honor him in that way.
Yeah, and that's fantastic. Let me read just a little bit more, if you will, Brian, about the Ann Stork Center, just so that people get an understanding and an overall impression of exactly what the Ann Stork Center is and how it's grown over the years. Back in 81, of course, the Ann Stork Center was incorporated. She certainly believed in a loving and nurturing philosophy, which to this day still continues at the foundation for the organization. And after the center expanded beyond her home, the first building was constructed, and a combination of donations and private investment funds, and which is now referred to as the Fort Lauderdale campus. From 84 to 94, it opened up the Pembroke Pines Intermediate Care Facility in conjunction with the state of Florida, and the site is currently home to 24 adults with obviously severe disabilities. It consists of three family-like homes sprawled amongst their spacious campus. In 94, ACS, the Ann Stork Center, opened up four group homes, which became part of the family services. One of these homes included the famous Gizmo House, a technologically advanced home which supports individuals to exercise their independence through assistive technology. The Gizmo House features tables and countertops that move up and down, curtains and bedroom floors that open and shut, and even a pantry that rotates according to the individual snack of choice, and so on and so forth. To learn more, of course, about that, they can check out the feature on CNN, has a feature on that on YouTube, so they can go there. And currently today, the Ann Stork Center serves more than 300 children and adults with disabilities such as epilepsy, cerebral palsy, autism, Down syndrome, and some intellectual disabilities as well. And obviously their goal is to enrich the lives of children and adults with these disabilities while empowering them to discover their abilities and building independence. So a very worthwhile cause for Wyndham to become involved with, of course, and obviously what a great platform having this charity tournament, if you will, organized by Wyndham. So how did the, again, obviously we know sort of how the tournament came about. We understand the partnership with Wyndham and of course, the Ann Stork Center. It acts obviously as a fundraiser. You have several levels of sponsorships in addition to you as the presenter. Is it too late if somebody wants to sort of jump in as a sponsor, or is it pretty much filled for this year?
No, we'd actually love to take a few more sponsors if anyone's got the interest in it. So we have we have two spots left to fill up the entire roster. So even if there's an organization out there that's interested, they would like to give back to their community for a wonderful cause. We have two spots left, and I can give you the contact information. You can also go to the Ann Stork Center website, which is annstorkcenter.org, to sign up and put in a foursome. We have some silver sponsorships. Those are those come along with a foursome, lunch, some play variety gifts, and we have some gold sponsorship as well. And again, we would love to have some more sponsorships come out. You know, last year, Ted, we raised just over $53,000 for the Ann Stork Center. And this year, we're hoping to do the same. Now, you know, what's important about that, and I want to point out, is that, you know, the tournament itself, we have about 40 of our employees in South Florida that volunteer to put this tournament together. So they do everything from, you know, handing out bottled waters to greeting people when they, you know, greeting golfers when they come in and helping to move bags and things like that. And the tournament itself will raise about $25,000 on the day of the tournament. Wyndham Vacation Ownership matches every donation that we get. So, wow. You know, if we break our own record, Wyndham is happy to match that donation. And, you know, so every sponsorship, every foursome really helps out to raise additional money. So if somebody comes out and they donate a $500 foursome, you know, it really just turns your donation into $1,000. And it's really just an amazing thing. I'm happy to work for a company that's willing to do that. It's a very big commitment.
Fantastic, and I like that. I think it's great. You know, I think any time, you know, whether you're a business owner or a business, I think that when you can give back to your communities, I think that says a lot. And having said that, Brian, what I would like to do, obviously, I'd be remiss if I didn't give you an opportunity to talk about Wyndham Vacation Opportunities a little bit here. I know we're wanting to focus on the tournament and the Ann Storck Center, but I want to give you an opportunity to talk about Wyndham because you are your organization is a presenter of this tournament. And so I want to give you an opportunity just for those that might be listening that are not familiar with what it is that you do and what it is that you offer. I'll give you the floor and just talk a little bit about Wyndham.
Sure. Well, Wyndham Vacation Ownership, which is obviously who we work for and puts on the tournament, we have over 185 resorts in the continental states. We have over 200 resorts worldwide, all in the vacation ownership division of the hospitality industry. We have resorts in, of course, the United States, but Canada, Mexico, Australia, New Zealand, Caribbean, and as far away as Fiji. And, you know, we have resorts that are, if you're a skier, they're in the mountains, and if you love the beach, we've got plenty on the beach, and we've got some beautiful golf course resorts as well. So, you know, Wyndham Vacation Ownership is just a great company. We have as I started saying earlier, just a large philanthropical side of the company called Wishes by Wyndham. And, you know, they're designed to empower both the company and a lot of the employees to make a meaningful impact in the communities. So, you know, what that means is that every resort is encouraged and every associate is encouraged to make an impact in their community and volunteer in the local side. Another great thing that Wyndham does is that they offer every one of their associates in the company a paid day off to go and actually volunteer within the community. So, you know, we have many of our associates that you know, times are tough, right? And it might be a little hard to take a day off to go work at the local soup kitchen or at a place like the Ann Storck Center. So Wyndham offers for every one of their associates an actual paid day off to go and volunteer somewhere in the local community. And, you know, I'm not real sure what the percentage is, but I can tell you that in South Florida, it's highly taken advantage of. So, you know, 80% of our associates somewhere in that rough ballpark will actually take advantage of that and go work in their communities for a day. And many associates do much more than that. So, you know, it's nice to have one, but many of our associates are out there doing multiple things for the community. So, you know, as well for a place like the Ann Storck Center, as I mentioned, we paint some of their campuses, and we painted the inside of a preschool a short time ago. We also host a volleyball tournament on the beach in the fall time. So, you know, it's something that our associates and our company is just very engaged in, and we're happy to do it. And again, as I said, you know, the four South Florida resorts, we have over 40 associates that will you know, that will participate as volunteers for this event. So, and we have a lot of major sponsors as well that we're just so lucky to have on our side to make this another successful tournament this year.
And if somebody's interested, Brian, and maybe learning a little bit more about Wyndham not just obviously about the tournament, but maybe interested in taking you up on some of the opportunities that Wyndham does have to offer, where can they go to get more information?
Oh, absolutely. If someone's interested in taking advantage of a great vacation ownership company and getting out some quality time with your family, you can go to WyndhamVacationOwnership.com, and there's plenty of information there that will show you around. So again, we go from coast to coast, from California to South Florida all the way up to Vermont and New Hampshire. So lots of opportunity to travel with family, and we're in some excellent places. But Wyndham Vacation Ownership .com is the main website, and that'll bring you right to any information that you would need for us.
Fantastic, and thank you for that. Now, also, too, as you were mentioning a few moments ago, in addition to some availability for sponsorship, I think you mentioned there's still some spots left. Excuse me, if openings for those that maybe still want to play in the tournament, there's still some time for that.
Yeah, there is. We've got as of this afternoon, we had just two spots left open. And that was really just we were actually sold out, and then we had a couple of vendors that had some out of town emergencies, so they opened up a couple spots for us. I can give you an email address to one of our coordinators. It's rosa.garcia@wyn.com, and she'll be able to sign you up and hold a spot if that's something you're interested in. And again, we've got another gold sponsorship available. We have a silver sponsorship available. And, you know, if there's a company out there, an individual on the line that would like to you know, donate in another way, and they're not able to come to the tournament on May 14th, we have a raffle after the tournament, so we'll always take some donations for raffle prizes. They can be, again, rosa.garcia@winwyn.com can help to take those donations. And, you know, if you're local, we can have somebody pick them up. And, you know, also some silent auction items. We've got a great silent auction with a lot of different sports memorabilia, some great artwork, jewelry, paintings. A couple of years back, I'm not sure if we'll have it again this year, but we had some awesome boxing gloves signed by Muhammad Ali himself.
Wow.
So just some really, really cool stuff at the tournament afterwards. So, again, we'll take donations for any raffles, silent auctions, you know, anything out there. But, hey, golf's a great game. It brings us all together. It's just awesome, and that's what we're here to talk about. So, you know, we would love to have a couple other folks come out. And, hey, if you're interested in volunteering, we're happy to do that as well, to get involved with a great organization like the Ann Stork Center. It's just an awesome place to be. They do some phenomenal things in our community. If you ever get a chance to get down to South Florida and visit the campus of the Ann Stork Center, I promise you it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and you get an amazing appreciation for what these people do, you know, for the children in our community. It's something that will warm you up real good.
Yeah, and well said, Brian. And let me just—I'd be remiss if I didn't also thank Joni Knight, who, of course, helped set up this interview. She reached out to me a couple of weeks ago through another guest of mine who was on a few weeks ago, and heard that she was coming on the program to promote another tournament, and decided to reach out, and I was able to accommodate her and move some people around, if you will, and I was happy to do that when I heard what Wyndham was doing, and of course the charity that was involved. I was more than happy to accommodate you guys here sort of last minute, so I'm glad to do that and share that with my listeners. So Joni, if you happen to be tuning in tonight, I know you're busy working on some things for the weekend, but thank you very much for reaching out and connecting Brian and I here on the show tonight. Having said that, let me just say this. You know, Brian, I think what Wyndham is doing, and of course what Mike has done in the past, and it's very sad that he's no longer with us. But I think you have a great tournament, certainly a great partnership through Wyndham, and certainly for a worthwhile cause. I think any time, as I mentioned earlier, that we can reach out and help others in whatever capacity, whether it be through volunteering our time or doing a fundraising tournament like this to be able to give back to those that maybe are in a position that have some challenges, whatever they may be. I think it's a fantastic thing, and it says a lot about not only the center itself, but also about Wyndham Vacation Ownership and all your team for stepping in and doing that every year.
Absolutely. Thank you. And it's a pleasure to be able to do a tournament like this with an organization like the Ann Stork Center. And again, you know, to have 40 plus of our associates come to volunteer their time is just amazing. You know, we've got a lot of support coming down from our corporate office as well. Our chief operating officer, some of our senior vice presidents. You know, they're all coming from as far away as Orlando. We have people coming over from Puerto Rico to play in this thing, and that's really how popular the tournament itself has gotten. And you know, it's just great to have the support all around. So, you know, Ted, the other thing I'd like to just like to say is
sure.
There are some come on as a sponsor. We do have some hole in one chances. It's just an awesome golf tournament. We've got some great sponsors, but if there's 5 hole in one chances, one of the holes, if you get the hole in one, you'll be driving home in a brand new Jaguar.
Wow!
Another hole in one is $10,000. So, you know, $10,000, then I'll get you a nice down payment on a Jaguar, I think, right?
Yes.
And a nice down payment anyway. And on the other three hole in ones, you've got a chance for $2,000 for a chance to win. So there's a lot of different opportunities out there to you know, come on and play. And we've got a putting contest, some long drive challenges, closer to the pin contest. So it's really well put together, and it's just going to be a great fun day.
Yeah, and it certainly sounds like that, and obviously somebody that's been in golf as an instructor and somebody that's been around the game for a long, long time, as I said a moment ago, I think any time that we can do something in the industry, that's one of the great things about golf, Brian, is that there's so many great people out there in the business that understand that the benefits of giving back. And golf has really been, in my opinion, a leader. The golf industry has been a leader and a champion in doing some great fundraising tournaments, both at the elite level with the PGA and LPGA tours and things like that, but also the many teacher professionals around the world that have their own tournaments and things like that, and other organizations such as yours at Wyndham that use golf really as a tool to be able to raise funds for some of these worthwhile causes. And it just says a lot about the industry as a whole. It's like another industry out there. There's certainly a lot of other charities and organizations that do charity benefits and that, but I don't think there's any sport in my mind that does it as well as golf. The PGA Tour, as I said, the LPGA have raised literally over $1 billion in the last couple of decades towards the charities that they work for. So it's certainly something that I think has been a proven fundraising tool. What's been some of the feedback over the last few years since you've been doing since you've been involved?
You know, we started the tournament. You know, like I said, this will be our fifth year. But you know, we've never put on one of these tournaments before. And you know, I'm certainly a golfer myself. I love the game of golf, and I love what you said about, you know, the game of golf, LPGA and PGA giving back. I think you're spot on. But you know, in the first year, you know, we put the tournament together. I think it was, you know, we learned quite a bit. We're not professional tour operators, right? I mean, we don't do this necessarily for a living. We've gotten some great help from a lot of professionals along the way. You know, we did the tournament the first year, and we raised just about, I think, about $8,000. And, you know,
wow,
we've come a long way raising over 50, you know, in 5 years.
Yep.
We've been able to grow that tournament by, you know, what is that, 6 or 7 times what we did in the
yep,
very first year. So, you know, we were able to change things around a little bit. And but I will tell you that the folks that played the first year are still playing now in the fifth year. And, you know, we've taken the feedback and we've just gotten better and better. And, you know, it's a returning squad of many of our vendors in the area because,
mm-hmm,
you know, a couple of years ago, Mike worked with a lot of these people. So we have a plumbing company, for example, that services many of our resorts in South Florida. And they come out, you know, to honor that memory. And we have, you know, a company called Kogan Consulting, right? And they do a lot of the renovations for our resorts. And they come out, and they've been playing again with us for about 5 years. So, you know, the feedback on the tournament has just been outstanding. And we're very lucky because the Ann Stork Center team will actually bring some of the residents to the golf tournament. And,
oh, fantastic.
It's great to see. And, yeah, it really is awesome. And it's great to see, you know, them come out into the community and for our, you know, members and for our vendors and for our players to be able to see exactly what it is that they're supporting. You know, I think it makes a big difference when you can really see, you know, what you're supporting,
yep,
and how you're helping the community. I myself have been to the Ann Stork Center many times. We continue to volunteer there with our staff. So, you know, for us, and the reason I think most of our staff are so engaged in this tournament is that we, you know, we've been to the center and we see the good that these folks do. So for the Ann Stork coordinators and volunteers to be able to bring some of their residents to the tournament is just an absolutely huge impact. And I tell you, the smile on their faces when they see the tournament, it's just awesome.
Yeah.
There's one young lady there, and gosh, I apologize, I forget her name, but she does just these awesome paintings. And she comes every year and she talks about her paintings, and we raffle them off or we do them in a silent auction, and they always raise a couple extra dollars. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, fantastic. Yeah, that's fantastic. And see, that's what I, as I was alluding to earlier, that's what I love about the, you know, the game of golf is there's so many opportunities to, you know, number one, help those that maybe are a little less fortunate, but also make them feel like they're part of the community because they are part of the community and we have to do what we can to give back. So that's why I was very happy to accommodate Joni and yourself and allowing you to come on the program here. My program, of course, goes not just here locally around the United States, but obviously reaches around the world. So there's people that may be able to help. So if let's just give them an opportunity, those that might be tuning into the program tonight or that may tune in a little bit later on after the live broadcast, for those that, as you mentioned earlier, for those that maybe cannot come over or maybe aren't able to make it to the tournament, if they want to donate to the charity or help out for the cause, again, how can they do that? What's some of the best ways they can do it?
Absolutely. So The easiest way is the website annstorkcenter.org, and I'm going to spell it because it's A-N-N, Stork, S-T-O-R-C-K, center.org. And if you go to that page, you'll see a link to register for the golf tournament. And you can also, there'll also be links to donate straight on that page there as well. If you are interested in coming to the golf tournament with a foursome or even as a single player, foursomes are $500 each. Now, that includes mm-hmm. your tee times, and it includes a great lunch afterwards, by the way, as well as a silent auction and raffle, all at the Woodlands Country Club. So my assistant, her name is Rosa Garcia. Her email is rosa.garcia@wyn.com. Rosa puts in just countless number of hours speaking with our vendors and our volunteers and anybody who's donating their time or products to the tournament. And Rosa, hats off to her and all the work that she puts in throughout the year on this. But Rosa can also help to get you registered for the tournament. If you're interested in the silver sponsorship, that is out there as well, or a gold sponsorship, where we'd be happy to have a couple of more. So looking forward to the tournament.
That's fantastic. Brian, thank you very much. And just to remind everybody again, this is the fifth annual Mike Campbell Golf Tournament benefiting the Ann Stork Center, organized, of course, by Wyndham Vacation Ownership. And it takes place Thursday, May 14th. That's Thursday, May 14th. So just 2 weeks from tonight, actually, down at the Woodlands Country Club in South Florida. So if you're interested in participating and you want to learn, get a little bit more information, you can go to annstorkcenter.org, and there's a link as Brian has indicated. And just to remind you also, it's the registration is 6:30 a.m. Shotgun start, of course, will be at 8 a.m. Brian, I want to thank you very much for coming on the program tonight and sharing this, and I will, of course, make sure I have the links and that up on my social media that I use, and of course the link to the show is already there, but I'll be putting it up there again through different social media so that hopefully we can get some more buzz generated for the tournament. But I want to extend an invitation, whether it's yourself or somebody else from your organization, for next year to come back on the program. We'll set it up a little earlier, of course, but to come back on, and we'll be talking about the sixth annual Mike Campbell Golf Tournament benefiting the Ann Stork Center. So you have an invitation to come back next year if you wish and talk about the tournament again, and maybe we can talk about some of the things that happened at this year's tournament.
Great. We absolutely will. And, Ted, I really wanted to say thank you again to you and to your radio show. And I just think it's awesome that, the participation in this really goes a long way. And just to be able to get our name out there and potentially some more sponsorships and little more for the tournament, for a great cause, much appreciated. We thank you as well.
Yeah, not a problem. And Brian, thank you very much for coming on Golf Talk Live tonight and sharing that information and sharing the story of Mike Campbell as well. Certainly a very inspirational story, and I think anybody that has tuned in or tunes in a little bit later on and hears what you spoke of earlier, I think will certainly maybe create a spark in them to get out there and reach out and help others. So thank you again, Brian, for coming on and sharing that with us tonight, and much continued success with the tournament. And as I said, you're certainly welcome, you and your team, to come back on next year and in preparation for that tournament.
Great, Ted. Thank you very much. I do appreciate it again. Thank you.
All right. Not a problem. Have a great evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, again, that was Brian Dixon, a very special guest from Wyndham Vacation Ownership. And if you're interested in learning more about Wyndham, you can go to WyndhamVacationOwnership.com and learn a little bit about some vacation ownership opportunities that Wyndham has to offer. And certainly what a great cause that they're doing in support of this tournament. Mike Campbell, as he mentioned, was a former employee, if you will, of Wyndham, and just had a kind heart and decided that he wanted to give back to his community and do for others and in many ways, and getting involved, of course, with the Ann Stork Center as well. And again, thank you, Joni Knight, the special events manager at Ann Stork Center, for reaching out to me here in the last couple of weeks. More than happy to accommodate you and help in any way that I can. And if you're interested in learning more about the tournament again, you can go to www.annstorkcenter.org, and that's spelled A-N-N-S-T-O-R-C-K center.org. You can learn about the tournament there if you're interested in jumping in as a last minute player, or if maybe as Brian had indicated, there are still some sponsorship opportunities still available. You can learn and find out how to go about doing that. Still plenty of time left. We've got a couple of weeks left. So guys, do that. Certainly go onto the website and help out anyway. And if you're not able to make it to the tournament in a couple of weeks, whether you're here in the United States or around the world, there is an opportunity to give back. These young men and women and families that certainly have some difficult challenges there certainly could use your and my help at the Ann Storck Center. So please consider giving a donation if you're not able to attend the event. And if you're not able to attend this year, but maybe are going to be in the area or would like to attend next year, I'm sure they'll be more than happy to work you in for next year. But in the meantime, maybe you can do something now to help give to these individuals at the Ann Storck Center. So please do so. Again, the website is www.annstorckcenter.org. And again, the tournament is the 5th Annual Mike Campbell Golf Tournament, benefiting the Ann Storck Center, organized, of course, by Wyndham Vacation Ownership. And again, that date is Thursday, May the 14th, 2015. That's just two weeks from tonight. And it's being held at the Woodlands Country Club at 4600 Woodlands Boulevard down in the Fort Lauderdale, Florida area. Registration, again, is at 6:30 a.m. Shotgun start will be at 8 a.m. So great tournament, great cause. And again, I want to thank my special guest, Brian Dixon from Wyndham Vacation Opportunities, for coming on and sharing a little bit about that tonight. I want to thank my Coach's Corner panel tonight. Unfortunately, Scott Millman wasn't able to join us tonight. I know he had some other obligations, but we'll get him back here again real soon in another opportunity. But I want to thank Scott Cipherline and Brian Dobby, of course, for joining on the Coach's Corner panel tonight. And thank you guys always for your input, and I appreciate you taking time from your busy schedules, as I said, to do that. And I certainly... pardon me, been nursing a little bit of a cough here the last couple of weeks, so forgive me for coughing through the show, but I want to take this opportunity to thank all of my listeners worldwide for faithfully tuning into Golf Talk Live each and every week. I get a great amount of pleasure and enjoyment of having a number of highly talented coaches and teaching professionals, authors, and entrepreneurs, and special guests like Brian Dixon tonight from Wyndham coming on and talking about some great causes and tournaments that they've put together to help those causes. It's through their efforts and stopping by the program, through their participation and guest appearances, that help make Golf Talk Live a first-class show. So thank you to all of those both current and past, for coming on the show. And I'd like to give a special thank you, since I've got a few extra moments. We're going to end the program a little bit earlier than normal tonight. I want to give some special thank yous to Mr. Jonathan Laird of South Coast Golf Guide for doing your bit to contribute to the show and allowing me some great sponsorship opportunities and advertisement through your South Coast Golf Guide. If you're interested in getting a copy of Jonathan's guide, you can go to southcoastgolfguide.com. And learn how to get a copy and go to the website, of course, and you can see the online version of the guide, as well as some great courses that are featured in there. Again, go to southcoastgolfguide.com. If you're interested in advertising, go to Jonathan. You can email him, at jonathan@southcoastgolfguide.com. Some great advertising opportunities as well. Just let Jonathan know that I sent you here from Golf Talk Live, and I'm sure he will be more than happy to take care of you. It's a great guide. It's a pocket guide that is distributed throughout the Southeast and abroad, and has some great courses here in the southeastern part of the United States, virtually from Texas all the way over here to the northwest part of Florida. Lots of great courses in there, and lots of other great opportunities in there as well to talk about golf. So if you're interested in getting in the guide, or if you just wanted to pick yourself up a copy, you can go to pretty much most of the golf courses here throughout the southeastern part of the United States that carry the guide, and some of the major resorts as well are carrying it as well. But if you don't happen to be down the area and you're maybe up north and you're thinking of planning a trip sometime here in the next little while, and you want to know what some great golf opportunities are here in the southeastern part of the United States, just go to southcoastgolfguide.com, and you can put a request in there to have a copy shipped to you, and Jonathan will be more than happy to send a copy up to you if you're not down here in the immediate near future. Also, I want a special thank you to Meredith Kirk of Meredith Kirk Golf. She was the 2014 Miss of South Carolina. She's been on the show a few times and does a lot of great work as a result of her crown as Miss of South Carolina back in 2014, with also a great instructor, fantastic golf instructor, and does some great work with the Junior Golf Exchange and getting some clubs and equipment into the hands of some children that don't, some youngsters rather, that don't have the opportunity to maybe to go out and purchase for themselves, and works with some great partnerships. So you can certainly go to meredithkirk.com and get all the information you want, or juniorgolfexchange.org, her charity and foundation that she uses to help some of those youngsters get exposed to this great game. So certainly you can reach out to Meredith Kirk at meredithkirk.com. Nikki and Tiffany Litherland, thank you always. Some friends I've made through social media and originally over in Australia and now here in the United States. Thank you for all of your continued support and help spreading the word about the show, Golf Talk Live. I appreciate that. And we're going to get Nikki on here. I know I've mentioned that a few times and just have been so busy here lately. I haven't had a chance to reach out to Nikki, but I will to him and have him come on the program and share some great thoughts and insights in this great game that we all love so much. Mr. Bernie Pinder, my friend Bernie, who very graciously sent me one of his custom Ontic golf putters a couple years ago. I would use it diligently and has helped shave a few strokes off my game for sure. So, Bernie, thank you very much. I know you've had some personal difficulties here in the last year or so with family members, Nat. So my heart and heartfelt prayer and thought go out to you and your family, and wish you all the best and everything there. But some great businessman and great line of customized putters, Ontic Golf. Go to Ontic Golf, and that's ontic golf.com, and learn more about that and get one of his putters in your hot little hands. Great deal, and a true pioneer in the golf business, and wish him much continued success. Thank you, Bernie Pinder, for your support of the program. Mr. Sean Kelly, of course, of LinkedGolfers.com. Sean, as I've mentioned before, started Linked Golfers in LinkedIn, of course, another large social media platform that's really geared more for business types. He runs the largest golf group in LinkedIn called LinkedGolfers.com, and decided here a little over a year ago, I believe, almost 2 years ago, I believe, he decided that he wanted to bring that platform out of LinkedIn. Of course, it's still in LinkedIn, but you can access it there, but wanted to bring it out and offer even more to those that are interested not only in the golf industry, but those that are interested in about golf. So go to linkedgolfers.com and see some of the many partners that he's working with, and some get some great information and great access to knowledge about golf through linkedgolfers.com. Thank you, Sean, for your continued support, and hope you have much continued success with linkedgolfers.com. And last but not least, of course, my good friend over in Ireland, Mr. Peter Doyle from Doyle Golf Solutions, a master club fitter, a teach professional, and just a great guy. Always likes to have a good time. And hopefully, Peter, I missed you a couple of years ago. You were over here to the PGA show, and I didn't go, of course, this past year, but I knew we were going to try and connect there and meet up, and unfortunately my time just didn't permit. But if you're planning on coming over to the next golf PGA show down in Orlando, or if you're going to be over here in the United States, hopefully you'll reach out and we'll try and connect and meet face-to-face. But thank you for your continued support and overseas and much continued success with your ventures as well. And thank you for your support of the program. And to you, of course, last but not least, once again, to all of the listeners of the program from literally around the world, thank you again for all of your continued support. And I will see you guys back here next Thursday at 6 p.m. Central, right here on Golf Talk Live. God bless everybody, and have a great week.